Lock it.
Apple, I whisper to Aang Harad, my head close to hers.
Apple,
she says back, clipping at it with her teeth, lips back.
Todd,
she says, munching it, and then she makes an asking of it.
Todd?
Nothing to do with you, girl, I whisper, rubbing her nose. We're down from the gate where Ivan's still guarding, still trying to catch my eye. I can hear him calling quietly to me in his noise. I still ignore him. That was effing intense, Davy says, trying to read my noise, trying to see what I might think about it all. But I'm keeping it as flat as I can, feeling nothing, taking nothing in. You're a cool customer these days, Davy says, his voice scornful, ignoring Deadfall, who's wanting an apple too. You didn't even flinch when he... Gentlemen, the mayor says, coming out of the gate, a long, heavy sack in one hand. Ivan stands up straight as a board, back at attention. Pa, Davy says in greeting.
Is she dead? I say, looking in Aang Harad's eyes.
She's no use to us dead, Todd, the mayor says.
She sure looked dead, Davy says.
Only when she lost consciousness, the mayor says. Now I've got a new job for the two of you. There's a beat as we take in the words, a new job. I close my eyes. I am the circle, and the circle is me.
Would you quit effing saying that?
Davy shouts at me. But we can all hear the horror in his own noise, the anxiety that's rising, the fear of his pa, of the new job, fear he won't be able to. You won't be leading the askings, if that's what you're afraid of, says the mayor.
I ain't afraid, Davy says too loud. Who's saying I'm afraid?
The mayor drops the bag at our feet. I recognize its shape, feeling nothing, taking nothing in. Davy looks down at the bag, too. Even he's shocked. Just the prisoners, says the mayor, so we can fight against enemy infiltration on the inside.
You want us to... Davy looks up at his pa. On people?
Not people, says the mayor. Enemies of the state. I'm still looking at the bag. The bag that we all know carries a bolting tool and a supply of numbered bands.
30. The band. I've just set the timer running and turned to Mistress Braithwaite to tell her we can leave when a woman comes tumbling out of the bushes behind us.
Help me,
she says, so gently it's almost as if she doesn't know we're there and is just asking the universe to help her somehow. Then she collapses. What is this thing? I say, taking another bandage from the too small first aid kit we keep hidden in the cart, trying to tend her wound as we rock back and forth. There's a metal band encircling the middle of her forearm, so tight it seems like the skin around it is trying to grow into it. It's also so red with infection I can almost feel the heat coming off it. It's for branding livestock, Mr. Braithwaite says, angrily snapping the reins on the oxes, bumping us along paths that we aren't meant to take this fast. That vicious bastard!
Help me,
the woman whispers.
I'm helping you,
I say. Her head is in my lap to cushion it from the bumps in the road. I wrap a bandage around the metal band, but not before I see a number etched into the side. 1391.
What's your name?
I ask. But her eyes are half closed, and all she says is,
help me.
And we're sure she's not a spy, Mistress Coyle says, arms crossed.
Good God, I snap. Is there a stone where your heart should be? Her brow darkens.
We have to consider all manner of tricks. The infection is so bad we're not going to be able to save her arm, Mistress Braithwaite says. If she's a spy, she's in no position to return with information.
Mistress Coyle sighs.
Where was she? Near that new office of the Ask we've been hearing about,
Mistress Braithwaite says, frowning even harder. We planted a device on a small storehouse nearby, I say. It was as close as we could get.
Branding strips, Nicola,
Mistress Braithwaite says, anger puffing out of her like the steam of her breath. Mistress Coyle rubs her fingers along her forehead.
I know.
Can't we just cut it off? I ask. Heal the wound? Mistress Braithwaite shakes her head.
Chemicals make it so the banded skin never heals, that's the point. You can never remove it unless you want to bleed to death. They're permanent. Forever.
Oh my God.
I need to talk to her, Mistress Coyle says. Nadari's treating her, Mistress Braithwaite says. She might be lucid before the surgery. Let's go then, Mistress Coyle says, and they head off toward the healing tent. I move to follow, but Mistress Coyle stops me with a look. Not you, my girl.
Why not?
But off they keep walking, leaving me standing in the cold.
You all right, Hildy?
Wilf asks as I wander among the oxes. He's brushing them down where they strained against the harnesses.
Wilf,
they say. That's pretty much all they ever say. Rough night, I say. We rescued a woman who'd been branded with some kind of metal band. Wilf looks thoughtful for a minute. He points to a metal band around the right front leg of each ox.
Like these here?
I nod.
On a person?
He whistles in amazement. Things are turning, Wilf, I say. Turning for the worse.
I know,
he says.
We'll make a move soon and that'll be it, one way or t'other.
I look up at him. Do you know exactly what she's planning? He shakes his head and runs his hand around the metal band on one of the oxes.
Well,
says the ox.
Viola!
I hear, called across the camp. Wilf and I both see Mistress Coyle treading through the darkened camp toward us.
She's gonna wake everyone up,
Wilf says. She's a little delirious, Mistress Nadari says as I kneel down by the cot of the rescued woman. You've got a minute, tops.
Tell her what you told us, my girl, Mistress Coyle says to the woman. Just once more and we'll let you sleep.
My arm? Says the woman, her eyes cloudy. It don't hurt no more.
Just tell her what you said, my love,
Mistress Coyle says, her voice as warm as it ever gets.
And everything'll be all right.
The woman's eyes focus briefly on mine and widen slightly.
You,
she says.
A girl who was there.
Viola, I say, touching her non-banded arm.
We haven't got much time, Jess.
Mistress Coyle's voice gets a little sterner, even as she says what must be the woman's name.
Tell her.
Tell me what? I say, getting a little annoyed. It's cruel to keep her awake like this, and I'm about to say as much when Mistress Coyle says.
Tell her who did this to you.
Jess's eyes grow frightened.
Oh, she says. Oh, oh.
Just this one thing and we'll leave you be, Mistress Coyle says.
Mistress Coyle, I start to say, getting angry.
Boys,
the woman says.
Boys, not even men.
I take in a breath.
Which boys?
Mistress Coyle asks.
What were their names?
Davy,
says the woman, her eyes not seeing the inside of the tent anymore.
Davy was the older one.
Mistress Coyle catches my eye.
And the other?
The quiet one,
the woman says.
Didn't say nothing. Just did his job and didn't say nothing.
What was his name?
Mistress Coyle insists. I need to go, I say, standing up, not wanting to hear. Mistress Coyle grabs my hand and holds me there firmly.
What was his name?
She says again. The woman is breathing harshly now, almost panting. That's enough, Mistress Nadari says. I didn't want this in the first...
1 second more,
Mistress Coyle says. Nicola, Mistress Nadari warns.
Todd,
says the woman on the cot, the woman I saved, the woman with the infected arm she's going to lose, the woman I now wish was at the bottom of the ocean I've never seen.
The other one called him Todd.
Get away from me, I say, as Mistress Coyle follows me out of the tent.
He's alive, she's saying, but he's one of them.
Shut up, I say, stomping across the camp, not caring how loud I'm being. Mistress Coyle races forward and grabs my arm.
You've lost him, my girl, she says, if you ever really had him in the first place.
I slap her face so fast and hard she doesn't have time to defend herself. It's like smacking a tree trunk. The solid weight of her staggers back and my arm rings with pain.
You don't know what you're talking about,
I say, my voice blazing.
How dare you, she says, her hand to her face.
You haven't even seen me fight yet, I say, standing my ground. I knocked down a bridge to stop an army. I put a knife through the neck of a crazy murderer. I saved the lives of others while you just ran around at night blowing them up.
You ignorant child!
I step toward her. She doesn't step back, but she stops her sentence.
I hate you,
I say slowly. Everything you do makes the mayor respond with something worse.
I did not start this war.
But you love it! I take another step toward her. You love everything about it, the bombs, the fighting, the rescues. Her face is so angry I can even see it in the moonlight. But I'm not afraid of her. And I think she can tell.
You want to see it as simple good and evil, my girl, she says. The world doesn't work that way. Never has, never will, and don't forget.
She gives me a smile that could curdle milk.
You're fighting the war with me.
I lean in close to her face. He needs to be overthrown, so I'm helping you do it. But when it's done... I'm so close I can feel her breath. Are we going to have to overthrow you next? She doesn't say anything. But she doesn't back down either. I turn on my heels and I walk away from her.
He's gone, Viola!
Mistress Coyle shouts after me. But I just keep walking. I need to go back to the city.
Now?
Wilf says, looking up at the sky.
Be dawn soon. Tain't safe.
It's never safe, I say. But I have no choice. He blinks at me. Then he starts gathering ropes and bindings to get the cart ready again. No, I say. You'll have to show me how to do it. I can't ask you to risk your life.
You're going for Todd?
I nod.
Then I'll take you.
Wilf.
Still early,
he says, backing the oxes into position.
I'll at least get you close.
He doesn't say another word as he reharnesses the oxes to his cart. They ask him,
Wilf? Wilf?
In surprise at being used so quickly again after thinking their night of work was finished. I think about what Jane would say. I think about putting her Wilf into danger. But all I say is, thank you.
I'm coming too.
I turn around. Lee is there, rubbing sleep out of his eyes, but dressed and ready. What are you doing up? I ask. And no, you're not.
Yes, I am,
he says.
And who can sleep with all that shouting?
It's too dangerous, I say. They'll hear your noise. He keeps his mouth shut and says to me,
Then they can just hear it.
Lee!
You're going to look for him, aren't you?
I sigh in frustration, beginning to wonder if I should abandon the idea altogether before I put anyone else in danger.
You're going to the office of the Ask,
Lee says, lowering his voice. I nod. And then I understand. Siobhan and his mom might be there. I nod again. And this time he knows I've agreed. No one tries to stop us, though half the camp must know we're going. Mistress Coyle must have her reasons. We don't talk much as we go. I just listen to Lee's noise and its thoughts of his family, of the mayor, of what he'll do if he ever gets his hands on him. Thoughts of me.
You'd better say something, Lee says. Listening that close is rude.
So I've heard, I say. But my mouth is dry and I find I don't have much to say. The sun rises before we get to the city. Wilf pushes the oxes as fast as they'll go, but even so, it's going to be a dangerous trip back, with the city awake, with noisy men on our cart. We're taking a terrible risk. But on Wilf drives. I've explained what I want to see, and he says he knows a place. He stops the cart deep in some woods and directs us up a bluff.
"Keep your heads down now," he says. "Don't be seen."
"We won't," I say. "But if we're not back in an hour, don't wait for us." Wilf just looks at me. We all know how likely him leaving us is. Lee and I make our way up the bluff, keeping down in the cover of the trees until we reach the top and see why Wilf chose the place. It's a hill near where the tower fell, one where we've got a clear view of the road coming down toward the office of the Ask, which we've heard is some kind of prison or torture chamber or something like that. I don't even want to know. We lie on our stomachs, side by side, looking out from some bushes.
"Keep your ears open," Lee whispers.
As if we need to. As soon as the sun rises, New Prentice Town roars to life. I begin to wonder if Lee even needs to hide his noise so much. How could it not be possible to drown in it?
"Because drowning is the right word," Lee says when I ask. "If you disappeared into it, you'd suffocate."
"I can't imagine what it's like growing up inside it all," I say.
"No,"
he says.
"No, you can't."
But he doesn't say it in a mean way. I squint down the road as the sun brightens. I wish I had some binocs. Lee reaches into a pocket and pulls out a pair. I give him a look. "You were just waiting for me to ask so you could look all impressive."
"I don't know what you're talking about,"
he says, smiling, putting the binocs to his eyes. "Come on." I push him with my shoulder. "Give them to me." He stretches away to keep them out of my grabbing range. I start to giggle. So does he. I grab onto him and try to hold him down while I snatch at the binocs, but he's bigger than me and keeps twisting them away. "I'm not afraid to hurt you," I say.
"I don't doubt that,"
he laughs, turning the binocs back to the road. His noise spikes, loud enough to make me afraid someone will hear us. "What do you see?" I say, not giggling anymore. He hands the binocs to me, pointing.
"There,"
he says.
"Coming down the road."
But I'm already seeing them in the binocs. Two people on horseback. Two people in shiny new uniforms, riding their horses. One of them talking, gesturing with his hands. Laughing. Smiling. The other keeping his eyes on his horse, but riding along to work. Riding along to his job at the office of the Ask. In a uniform with a shiny A on the shoulder. Todd. My Todd. Riding next to Davy Prentice. Riding to work with the man who shot me.
31. Numbers and letters. The days keep passing. They keep getting worse.
"All of them?"
Davy asks, his noise ringing with badly hidden alarm.
"Every single one?"
"This is a vote of confidence, David," the mayor says, standing with us at the door of the stables while our horses are made ready for the day's work. "You and Todd did such an excellent job with permanently identifying the female prisoners. Who else would I want to be in charge of expanding the program?" I don't say nothing, not even acknowledging Davy's looks at me. His noise is confused with the pink of his pa's praise. But then there's also his thoughts about banding all the women. Every single one. 'Cause banding the ones in the office of the Ask was even worse than we thought. They keep leaving, the mayor says. In the dead of night, they slip away and cast their lot with the terrorists. Davy's watching Deadfall get saddled in a small paddock, his noise clanking with the faces of the women who get banded, the cries of pain they make, the words they speak to us. And if they keep getting out, the mayor says, they obviously keep getting in, too. He means the bombs. One every night for the past 2 weeks, nearly. So many, they must be increasing for a reason. They must be leading up to something bigger, and no women have been caught planning them except once when a bomb blew up while the woman was still putting it in place. They didn't find much left of her except bits of clothing and flesh. I close my eyes when I think of it, feeling nothing, taking nothing in. Was it her? Feeling nothing. You want us to number all the women? Davy says again quietly, looking away from his pa. I've said it before. The mayor sighs. Every woman is part of the answer, if only because she is a woman, and therefore sympathetic to other women. The groomsmen bring Ang Harad into a nearby paddock. She sticks her head over the rail to bump me with her nose.
Todd,
she says. They'll resist, I say, stroking her head. The men won't like it neither. Ah, yes, says the mayor. You missed yesterday's rally, didn't you? Davy and I look at each other. We were at work all day yesterday and didn't hear nothing about no rally. I spoke to the men of New Prentistown, the mayor says, man to man. I explained to them the threat the answer poses us and how this is the next prudent step forward to ensure safety for all.
He rubs a hand down Ang Harad's neck.
I try to hide how prickly my noise gets at the sight. I encountered no resistance. There weren't no women at this rally, I say. Were there? He turns to me. I wouldn't want to encourage the enemy among us, now would I?
But there's effing thousands of them, Davy says. Banding them all will take forever.
There will be other teams working, David, the mayor says calmly, making sure he's got his son's full attention. But I'm sure the two of you will outwork any of them. Davy's noise perks up a bit at this.
You bet we will, Pa, he says.
He looks at me, though. And there's worry there.
I stroke Ang Harad's nose again.
The groomsmen bring out Morpeth, freshly brushed and shiny with oil.
Submit,
he says. If you're worried, the mayor says, taking Morpeth's reins, ask yourself this. He hoists himself up in the saddle in one smooth movement, like he's made of liquid. He looks down at us. Why would any innocent woman object to being identified?
You won't get away with this,
the woman says, her voice almost steady. Mr. Hammer cocks his rifle behind us and aims it at her head.
You blind?
Davy says to the woman, voice a little too squeaky.
I'm getting away with it right now!
Mr. Hammer laughs. Davy twists the bolting tool with a hard turn. The band snaps into the woman's skin halfway up her forearm. She calls out, grabbing the band and falling forward, catching herself on the floor with her unbanded arm. She stops there a minute, panting. Her hair is pulled back into a severe knot, blondie and brown mixed together, like the wire filaments in the back of a vid player. There's a small patch on the back where the hair is gray, all growing together, a river across a dusty land. I stare at the gray patch, letting my eyes blur a little.
I am the circle, and the circle is me. Get up, Davy says to the woman, so the healers can treat you.
He looks back at the line of women staring at us down the hall to the front of the dormitory, waiting their turn.
The boy said, get up, Mr. Hammer says, waving his rifle.
We don't need you here,
Davy snaps, his voice tight.
We're doing just fine without no babysitter.
I ain't babysitting, Mr. Hammer smiles. I'm protecting.
The woman stands, her eyes on me. My own expression is dead. Removed. Not here, if it don't have to be. I am the circle, and the circle is me. Where's your heart? She asks. Where is your heart if you can do these things? And then she turns to where the healers, who we've already banded, wait to give her treatment. I watch her go. I don't know her name. Her number, though, is 1484.
1485?
Davy calls out. The next woman in line steps forward. We spend the day riding from one women's dormitory to another, getting through almost 300 bands, much faster than we ever did the spackle. We start for home when the sun begins to set, as New Prentice Town turns its thoughts to curfew. We ain't saying much.
What a day, eh, pig piss?
Davy says after a while. I don't say nothing, but he don't want an answer.
They'll be all right, he says. They got the healers to take away the pain and stuff.
Clop, clop, along we go. I hear what he's thinking. Dusk is falling. I can't see his face. Maybe that's why he ain't covering it up.
When they cry, though, he says.
I keep quiet.
Ain't you got nothing to say?
Davy's voice gets a little harder.
All silent now, like you don't want to talk no more? Like I ain't worth talking to?
His noise starts to crackle.
Not like I got anyone else to talk to, pig piss. Not like I got any choice in this situation. Not like no matter what I effin' do can I get moved up for it, given the good work, the fightin' work, all that stupid spackle babysitting crap. Then we turn right around and do the same thing to the women. And for what? For what?
His voice gets low.
So they can cry at us, he says. So they can look at us like we ain't even human.
We ain't, I say, surprised to find I said it out loud.
Yeah, that's the new you, ain't it? He says, sneering. All Mr. No Feeling I Am the Circle Tough Guy. You'd put a bullet through your own ma's head if Pa told you to.
I don't say nothing, but I grind my teeth together. Davy's quiet for a minute, too. Then he says, sorry. Then he says, sorry, Todd, using my name. Then he says,
what the hell am I saying sorry for? You're the stupid can't-read pig piss all getting on my pa's good side. Who cares about you?
I still don't say nothing, and clop, clop, along we go.
Forward,
Angharad neighs to Deadfall,
who nickers back.
Forward.
Forward,
I hear in her noise, and then,
boy colt, Todd.
Angharad, I whisper twixt her ears.
Todd, Davy says. Yeah, I say. I hear him breathe out through his nose. Nothing. Then he changes his mind.
How do you do it?
Do what? I see him shrug in the dusk.
Be so calm about it all. Be so, I don't know, unfeeling. I mean,
he drifts off and says, almost too quietly to hear, one more time,
when they cry.
I don't say nothing, 'cause how can I help him? How can he not know about the circle, unless his pa don't want him to?
I do know, he says. But I tried that crap, and it don't work for me, and he won't...
He stops abruptly, like he said too much.
Ah, screw it, he says.
We keep riding,
letting the roar of New Prentice Town enfold us
as we enter the main part of town, the horses calling their orders to each other, reminding themselves of who they are.
You're the only friend I got, pig piss,
Davy finally says.
Ain't that the biggest tragedy you ever heard?
Tiring day? Mayor Ledger says to me when I come into our cell. His voice is oddly light, and he keeps his eyes on me.
What do you care?
I sling my bag on the floor and flop down on the bed without taking my uniform off.
I suppose it must be exhausting torturing women all day.
I blink in surprise.
I don't torture 'em, I growl. You shut your mouth about that. No, of course you don't torture them. What was I thinking? You just strap a corrosive metal band into their skin that can never be removed without them bleeding to death. How could that possibly be construed as torture? Hey, I sit up. We do it fast and without fuss. There are lots of ways to make it worse, and we don't do that. If it's gotta be done, then it's best that it's done by us. He crosses his arms, his voice still light. That excuse going to help you sleep tonight? My noise roars up. Oh, yeah? I snap. Was that you the mayor didn't hear shouting at the rally yesterday? Was that you who weren't making that brave stand against him? His face goes stormy, and I hear a flash of gray resentment in his noise. And get shot? He says. Or dragged away to be asked? How would that help anything? And that's what you're doing? I say. Helping? He don't say nothing of that. Just turns and looks out one of the windows. Out over the few lights that come on only in essential places. Out over the roar of a town wondering when the answer are gonna make their big move, and from where, and how bad it'll be, and who's gonna save them. My noise is raised and red. I close my eyes and take in a deep, deep breath. I am the circle, and the circle is me. Feeling nothing. Taking nothing in. They were getting used to him again, Mayor Ledger says out the window. They were uniting behind him, because what are a few curfews against being blown up? But this is a tactical mistake. I open my eyes at tactical, because it seems a weird word to choose. The men are terrified now, he's still saying. Terrified they're going to be next. He looks down at his own forearm, rubbing a spot where a band might go. Politically, he's made a mistake. I squint at him. What do you care if he's made a mistake? I ask. Whose side are you on? He turns to me as if I've insulted him, which I guess I have. The towns, he steams. Whose side are you on, Todd Hewitt? There's a knock on the door. Saved by the dinner bell, Mayor Ledger says. The dinner bell don't knock, I say, getting to my feet. I unlock the door with my key, kerthunk, and open it. It's Davy. He don't say nothing at first, just looks nervous, eyes here and there. I figure there's a problem at the dormitories, so I sigh and move back to my bed to get my few things. I ain't even had time to get my boots off. It'll take a minute, I say to him. Ang Harrod'll still be eating. She won't like being saddled up again so soon. He still ain't said nothing, so I turn to look at him. He's still nervous, not meeting my eye. What? I say. He chews on his upper lip, and all I can see in his noise is embarrassment and asking marks and anger at Mayor Ledger being there, and more asking marks. And there, behind it all, a weird, strong feeling, almost guilty, almost clear. Then he covers it up fast, and the anger and embarrassment come foremost. Effin' pig piss, he says to himself. He pulls angrily at a strap on his shoulder, and I see he's carrying a bag. Effin', he says again, but don't finish the thought. He unsnaps the flap on it and takes something out. Here, he practically shouts, thrusting it at me. My ma's book. He's given me back my ma's book. Just take it! I reach out slowly, taking it twixt my fingers and pulling it away from him like it was a fragile thing. The leather of the cover is still soft, the gash still cut through the front where Aaron stabbed me, and it was stopped by the book. I run my hand over it. I look up at Davy, but he won't meet my eye. Whatever, he says and turns again, stomping back down the stairs and out into the night.
32. Final preparations. I hide behind the tree, my heart pounding. I have a gun in my hand. I listen hard for the snap of twigs, the sound of any footsteps, any sign that'll tell me where the soldier is. I know he's there because I can hear his noise, but it's so flat and wide I only get a general idea of the direction he's going to come after me. Because he is coming for me. There's no doubt about that.
His noise grows louder. My back is to the tree, and I hear him off to my left. I'm going to have to leap at just the right second. I ready my gun. I see the trees around me and his noise, along with asking marks, wondering which one I'm hiding behind, narrowing it down to two, the one that I'm actually using, and one a few feet away to my left. If he chooses that one, I've got him. I hear his steps now, quiet against the damp forest floor. I close my eyes and try to concentrate solely on his noise, on exactly where he's standing, where he's placing his feet, which tree he's approaching. He steps. He hesitates. He steps again. He makes his choice. And I make mine. I jump and I'm ducking and twisting and sweeping my leg at his feet, and I'm catching him by surprise and he's falling to the ground, trying to aim his rifle at me, but I'm leaping on him and pinning his rifle arm down with my leg and throwing my weight on his chest and holding the barrel of my gun under his chin. I've got him.
Well done,
Lee says, smiling up at me.
Indeed, well done, Mistress Braithwaite says, stepping out of the darkness. And now comes the moment, Viola. What do you do with the enemy under your mercy?
I look down into Lee's face, breathing hard, feeling his warmth underneath me.
What do you do? Mistress Braithwaite asks again.
I look down at my gun. I do what I have to do, I say. I do what I have to do to save him. I do what I have to do to save Todd.
You're sure you want to do this?
Mistress Coyle asks for the 100th time as we leave the breakfast area the next morning, shaking off Jane's last insistences that we have more tea. I'm sure, I say.
You've got one chance before we make our move. One.
He came for me once, I say. When I was captive, he came for me and made the biggest sacrifice he could make to do it. She frowns.
People change, Viola.
He deserves the same chance he gave me. Mistress Coyle hums. She's still not convinced. But I haven't given her any choice. And when he joins us, I say, think of the information he can provide.
Yes.
She looks away, looks out at the camp of the answer preparing itself for war.
Yes, so you keep saying.
Even with how well I know Todd, I can also see how anyone else would see him on horseback, would see him in that uniform, would see him riding with Davy, and they would think he's a traitor. And in the dead of night, when I'm under my blankets, unable to sleep, I think it too. What's he doing? What's he doing with Davy? And I try to put it out of my mind as best I can, because I'm going to save him. She's agreed that I can. She's agreed I can risk myself and go to the cathedral the night before the answer makes its final attack and try one last time to save him. She's agreed because I said if she didn't, I wouldn't help her with anything more. Not with the bombs, not with the final attack, not with the ships when they land, now 8 weeks away and counting. Nothing, if I couldn't try for Todd. Even with all that, I think the only reason she agreed is for what he could tell us when he got here. Mistress Coyle likes to know things.
You're brave to try, Mistress Coyle says. Foolish, but brave.
She looks me up and down once more, her face unknowable. What? I ask. She shakes her head.
Just how much of myself I see in you, you exasperating girl.
Think I'm ready to lead my own army? I say, almost smiling. She just gives me a last look and starts walking off into the camp, ready to give more orders, make more preparations, put the final touches to the plans for our attack, which happens tomorrow. Mistress Coyle, I call after her. She turns. Thank you, I say. She looks surprised, her forehead furrowed. But she nods, accepting it.
Got it,
Lee calls over the top of the cart.
Got it,
I say, twisting the final knot and locking the clamp into place.
That's all of them,
Wilf says, smacking some dust off his hands. We look at the carts, 11 of them now, packed to bursting with supplies, with weapons, with explosives. Almost the entire stash of the answer. 11 carts doesn't seem like much against an army of 1,000 or more, but that's what we have.
Been done before,
Wilf says, quoting Mistress Coyle, but he's always so dry you never know if he's making fun.
Only a matter of tactics.
And then he smiles the same mysterious smile Mistress Coyle always gives. It's so funny and unexpected, I laugh out loud. Lee doesn't, though. Yes, her top-secret plan. He pulls a rope on the cart to test that it holds. I expect it has to do with him, I say. Getting him, somehow, and then once he's gone, his army will fall apart and the town will rise up against his tyranny and will save the day, Lee says, sounding unconvinced. He looks at Wilf. What do you think?
She says it'll be the end.
Wilf shrugs.
I want it to be done.
Mistress Coyle does keep saying that, that this could end the whole conflict, that the right blow in the right place right now could be all we need, that if even just the women of the town join us, we could topple him before winter comes, topple him before the ships land, topple him before he finds us. And then Lee says, I know something I shouldn't. Wilf and I both look at him. She passed by the kitchen window with Mistress Braithwaite, he says. They were talking about where the attack will come from tomorrow. Lee, I say.
Don't say it,
Wilf says. It's from the hill to the south of town. He presses on, opening his noise so we can't not hear it. The one with the notch in it. The one with the smaller road that leads right into the town square. Wilf's eyes bulge.
You shouldn't have said. If Hilda gets caught...
But Lee's only looking at me. If you get into trouble, he says, you come running toward that hill. You come running and that's where you'll find help. And his noise says, that's where you'll find me. And with burdened hearts, we commit you to the earth. One by one, we throw a handful of dirt on the empty coffin that doesn't contain anything of the body of Mistress Forth, blown to pieces when a bomb went off too early as she was planting it on a grain house. The sun is setting when we finish, dusk shining cold across the lake, a lake that had a layer of ice around the edges this morning that didn't melt all day. People start to spread out for the night's work. Last-minute packing and orders to be received. All the women and men who will soon be soldiers, marching with weapons, ready to strike the final blow. All they look like now are ordinary people. I'll leave tonight, as soon as it's fully dark. They'll leave tomorrow at sunset, no matter what happens to me.
It's time,
Mistress Coyle says, coming to my side. She doesn't mean it's time to leave. There's something else that has to happen first.
Are you ready?
She asks. As I'll ever be, I say, walking along with her.
This is a huge risk we're taking, my girl. Huge. If you're caught,
I won't be.
But if you are...
She stops us.
If you are, you know where the camp is. You know when we're attacking. And I'm going to tell you now that we're attacking from the East Road, the one by the office of the Ask. We're going to march into town and ram it down his throat.
She takes both my hands and stares hard into my eyes.
Do you understand what I'm telling you?
I do understand. I do. She's telling me wrong on purpose. She's telling me so I can truthfully give the wrong information if I'm caught. Like she did before about the ocean. It's what I'd do if I were her. I understand, I say. She pulls her cloak farther shut against a freezing breeze that's come up. We walk in silence for a few steps, heading toward the healing tent. Who did you save? I ask.
What?
She looks at me, genuinely confused. We stop again, which is fine with me. All those years ago, I say. Corinne said you were kicked off the council for saving a life. Who did you save? She looks at me thoughtfully and rubs her fingers across her forehead. I may not return, I say. You may never see me again. It'd be nice to know something good about you so I don't die thinking you're just a huge pain in my ass. She almost grins, but it disappears quickly, her eyes looking troubled again. Who did I save? She says to herself. She takes a deep breath. I saved an enemy of the state. You what? The answer was never exactly authorized, you see. She walks us off in a different direction, toward the shore of the freezing lake. The men fighting the Spackle War didn't really approve of our methods, effective as they might have been. She looks back at me. And they were very effective. Effective enough to get the heads of the Answer onto the ruling council when Haven was being put back together.
That's why you think it'll work now. Why you think it'll work against a bigger force.
She nods and rubs her forehead again. I'm surprised she hasn't built up a callus there. Haven restarted itself, she continues, using the captured Spackle to rebuild and so on. But some people weren't happy with the new government. Some people didn't have as much power as they thought they should.
She shivers under her cloak.
Some people in the Answer. She lets me realize what this might mean.
Bombs, I say.
Quite so. Some people get so caught up in warfare they start doing it for its own sake.
She turns away, so that maybe I can't see her face, or that maybe she can't see mine, see the judgment on it.
Her name was Mistress Thrace.
She's talking to the lake now, to the cold night sky.
Smart, strong, respected, but with a liking for being in charge. Which was exactly the reason no one wanted her on the council, including the Answer, and why she reacted so strongly to being left off.
She turns back to me.
She had her supporters, and she had her bombing campaign. Not unlike the one we're giving the mayor now, except, of course, that was meant to be peacetime.
She glances up at the moons.
She specialized in what we took to calling a Thrace bomb. She'd leave it somewhere soldiers were gathered, and it would look like an innocent package. Wouldn't arm itself until it felt the heartbeat in the skin of the hand picking it up. Your own pulse would make it dangerous, and at that point you knew it was a bomb and that it would only go off when you let it go. So if you dropped it or couldn't disarm it.
She shrugs.
Boom.
We watch a cloud pass between the two rising moons.
Meant to be bad luck, that is,
Mistress Coyle murmurs.
She loops her arm in mine again, and we start walking back toward the healing tent. And so there wasn't another war, exactly, she says. More of a skirmish. And to the delight of everyone, Mistress Thrace was mortally wounded.
There's a silence where you can only hear our footsteps and the noise of the men, crisp in the air. But not mortally wounded after all, I say.
She shakes her head. I'm a very good healer.
We reach the opening of the healing tent.
I'd known her since we were girls together on Old World. As far as I saw it, I had no choice.
She rubs her hands together.
They kicked me off the council for it. And then they executed her anyway.
I look at her now, trying to understand her. Trying to understand all that's good in her and all that's difficult and conflicted, and all the things that went into making her the person that she is. We are the choices we make, and have to make. We aren't anything else.
Are you ready? She says again.
Finally this time. I'm ready. We go into the tent. My bag is there, packed by Mistress Coyle herself, the one I'll carry on the cart with Wilf, the one I'll carry into town.
It's full of food. Completely innocent food, which, if all goes according to plan, will be my entry into town, my entry past the guards, my entry into the cathedral. If all goes well. If it doesn't, there's a pistol in a secret pouch at the bottom. Mistresses Lawson and Braithwaite are also in the tent, healing materials at the ready. And Lee is there, as I'd asked him to be. I sit down on the chair facing him. He takes my hand and squeezes it, and I feel a note in the palm of his hand. He looks at me, his noise filled with what's about to happen. I open the note, keeping its contents out of view of all three mistresses around me, who no doubt think it's something romantic or stupid like that. "Don't react," it reads. "I've decided I'm coming with you. I'll meet your cart in the woods. You want to find your family, I want to find mine, and neither of us should do it alone." I don't react. I refold the note and look back up at him, giving him the smallest of nods. "Good luck, Viola," Mistress Coyle says, words echoed rapidly by everyone else there, ending with Lee. I wanted him particularly to do this. I couldn't stand for it to have been Mistress Coyle, and I know Lee will take the best care. Because there's only one way I'm going to be able to move around New Prentice Town without getting caught. Only one way based on the intelligence we've gathered. Only one way I can find Todd.
"Are you ready?"
Lee asks, and it feels different coming from him, so much so that I don't mind being asked yet again. "I'm ready," I say. I hold out my arm and roll up my sleeve. "Just make it quick." I look into Lee's eyes. "Please."
"I will,"
he says. He reaches into the bag at his feet and takes out a metal band marked 1391.
33. Fathers and Sons. "Did he tell you what he wanted?" Davy asks. "When would I have talked with him when you weren't there?" I say. "Duh, pig piss. You live in the same building." We ride into the office of the Ask, the sun setting on the end of our day. 200 more women labeled. It goes faster with Mr. Hammer watching over it all with a gun. With the other teams around town led by Mr. Morgan and Mr. O'Hare, the word is we've got nearly every one of them, though the bands don't seem to be healing as fast on women as they do on sheep or spackle. I look up at the dusky sky as we move along the road and realize something. "Where do you live?" "Oh, now," he asks. Davy slaps the reins on Deadfall / Acorn, causing him to canter for about 2 steps and then drop back into a trot. 5 months we're working together almost. I'm asking now. Davy's noise is buzzing a little. He don't want to answer, I can tell. "You don't have to. Above the stables," he says. "Little room. Mattress on a floor. Smells like horse shit." We keep on riding.
"Forward,"
Angharad nickers.
"Forward,"
Deadfall nickers back.
"Todd,"
Angharad thinks. "Angharad," I say.
Davy and I ain't talked about my ma's book since he brought it to me 4 nights back. Not a word. And any sign of it in either of our noises gets ignored. But we're talking more. I begin to wonder what sort of man I'd be if I'd had the mayor as a father. I begin to wonder what sort of man I'd be if I'd had the mayor as a father and wasn't the son he wanted. I wonder if I'd be sleeping in a room over the stables. "I try," Davy says quiet. "But who knows what he effin' wants?" I don't know, so I don't say nothing. We tie up our horses at the front gates. Ivan tries to catch my eye again as I go inside, but I don't let him. "Todd," he says as we pass, trying harder. "That's Mr. Hewitt to you, private," Davy spits at him. I keep on walking. We take the short path from the gates to the front doors of the office of the Ask building. Soldiers guard those doors, too, but we walk on past them into the entryway, across the cold concrete floor, still uncovered, still unheated, and go into the same viewing room as before.
"Ah, boys, welcome," the mayor says, turning away from the mirror to greet us.
Behind him, in the arena of the Ask, is Mr. Hammer, wearing a rubber apron. Seated in front of him, a naked man is screaming. The mayor presses a button, cutting off the sound mid-cry. "I understand the identification scheme is complete?" he asks, bright and clear. "As far as we know," I say. "Who's that?" Davy asks, pointing at the man. "Son of the exploded terrorist," the mayor says. "Didn't run when his mother did. Foolish man. Now we're seeing what he knows." Davy curls his lip. "But if he didn't run off when she did..." "You both have done a tremendous job for me," the mayor says, clasping his hands behind his back. "I'm very pleased." Davy smiles, and the pink rush fills his noise. "But the threat is finally upon us," the mayor continues. "One of the original terrorists caught in the prison attack finally told us something useful." He looks back through the mirror. Mr. Hammer is blocking most of the view, but the man's bare feet are curling tightly against whatever Mr. Hammer's doing to him. "Before she unfortunately passed away, she was able to tell us that based on the patterns of the recent bombings, we can almost certainly expect a major move by the answer within days, perhaps as soon as tomorrow." Davy glances over at me. I keep looking at a middle point beyond the mayor on the blank wall behind. "They'll be defeated, of course," says the mayor. "Easily. Their force is so much smaller than ours that I can't see it lasting more than a day at most." "Let us fight, Pa," Davy says eagerly. "You know we're ready." The mayor smiles, smiles at his own son. Davy's noise goes so pink you can't hardly look at it. "You're being promoted, David," the mayor says, "into an army position. You will be Sergeant Prentice." Davy's smile almost explodes off his face in a little boom of pleased noise. "Hot damn!" he says, as if we weren't there. "You will be at Captain Hammer's side as he rides into battle at the front of the first wave," the mayor says. "You will get your fight exactly as you want." Davy's practically glowing. "Oh, man, thanks, Pa!" The mayor turns to me. "I'm making you Lieutenant Hewitt." Davy's noise gives a sharp change. "Lieutenant?" "You will be my personal bodyguard from the moment the fighting starts," the mayor goes on. "You will remain by my side, protecting me from any threats that may approach while I superintend the battle." I don't say nothing. Just keep my eyes on the blank wall. I am the circle, and the circle is me. "And this is how the circle turns, Todd," says the mayor. "Why does he get to be a lieutenant?" Davy asks, noise crackling. "Lieutenant isn't a battle rank," the mayor says smoothly. "Sergeant is. If you weren't a sergeant, you wouldn't be able to fight." "Oh," Davy says, looking back and forth to each of us to see if he's being made a fool of. "I don't think nothing about that." "There's no need to thank me, Lieutenant," the mayor teases. "Thank you," I say, my eyes still on the wall. "It keeps you from doing what you don't want," he says. "It keeps you from having to kill." "Unless someone comes after you," I say. "Unless someone comes after me, yes. Will that be a problem for you, Todd?" "No," I say. "No, sir." "Good," says the mayor. I look back through the mirror. The naked man's head has lolled lifelessly onto his chest, drool dripping from his slack jaw. Mr. Hammer is angrily taking off his gloves and slapping them on a table. "I am very blessed," the mayor says warmly. "I have achieved my ambition to put this planet back on track. Within days, maybe even hours, I will crush the terrorists. And when the new settlers come, it will be me who puts out a proud and peaceful hand to welcome them." He raises his hands, like he can't wait to start putting them out. "And who will be right beside me?" He holds his hands out to the two of us. "Both of you." Davy, buzzing pink all over, reaches out and takes his pa's hand. "I came into this town with one son," the mayor says, still holding out his hand to me.
but it has blessed me with another. And his hand is out, waiting for me to take it, waiting for his second son to shake his hand. Congrats, Lieutenant Pig Piss, Davy says, hopping back into Deadfall's saddle. Todd, Ivan says, stepping away from his post as I climb onto Angharad. Can I have a word? He outranks you now, Davy says to him. You'll address him as Lieutenant if you don't want to be digging bogs on the front lines. Ivan takes in a deep breath, as if to calm himself. Very well, Lieutenant. May I have a word with you?
I look down on him from Angharad's back.
Ivan's noise is busting with violence and the gunshot to his leg and conspiracies and resentments and ways to get back at the mayor, openly thought, as if to impress me. You should keep that quiet, I say. You never know who might hear.
I slap Angharad's reins, and off we go back down the road.
Ivan's noise follows me as I go. I ignore it, feeling nothing, taking nothing in. He called you son, Davy says, looking ahead as the sun disappears behind the falls. Guess that makes us brothers. I don't say nothing. We should do something to celebrate, Davy says. Where? I say. How? Well, we're officers now, ain't we, brother? It's my understanding officers get privileges. He looks over at me sideways, his noise bright as a flare, filled with things I used to see all the time in old Prentice Town. Pictures of women with no clothes. I frown and send him back a picture of a woman with no clothes and a band on her arm. So? Davy says. You're sick. No, brother. You're talking to Sergeant Prentice. I may finally be well. He laughs and laughs. He feels so good, some of it actually touches my own noise, brightening it whether I want it brightened or not. Oh, come on, Lieutenant Pig Piss. You ain't still pining for your girl, are you? She left you months ago. We need to get you someone new. Shut up, Davy. Shut up, Sergeant Davy. And he laughs again. Fine, fine, you just stay at home, read your book. He stops himself suddenly. Oh, damn. Sorry, no. I didn't mean that. I forgot. And the weird thing is, he seems sincere. There's a moment of quiet where his noise pulses again with that strong feeling he's hiding. That something he's trying to bury that makes him feel... And then he says, you know, I can see the offer coming, and I don't think I can bear it. I don't think I could live another minute if he says it out loud. If you ever wanted me to read it for... No, Davy, I say quickly. No. Thanks. No. You sure? Yes. Well, the offer's there. His noise goes bright again, blooming as he thinks about his new title, about women, about me and him as brothers, and he whistles happily all the way back to town. I lay on my bed with my back turned to Mayor Ledger, who's chomping down his dinner as usual. I'm eating too, but I've also got my ma's book out, just looking at it, lying on the blankets. People are wondering when the big attack's gonna happen, Mayor Ledger says. I don't answer him. I run my hand over the cover of the book like I do every night, feeling the leather, touching the tear where the knife went in with the tips of my